it was one of my greatest life experiences, in fact, to play in the National Hockey League, but not only that, to step on the ice in Maple Leaf Gardens and the Montreal Forum. Those are two experiences that I'll have with me the rest of my life.
What was the day of Cali Rudy's drafting?
Just a beautiful experience for me to get to sit between those guys and just sort of drink it all in and understand how two of the best that have ever played go about their business.
Even if you were born earlier, you'd just repress this time in LA. We're both Leafs fans. We both know how that story
went.
I wondered when that was going to come up.
Yeah, yeah.
A great fundraiser that we do with a lot of local sport teams. We're one of the first companies to offer no upfront costs. So what we offer basically is an ability for teams to sell the product ahead of time. They collect the money, they get the product at a discount, and they keep 50% of the proceeds.
So that's brilliant. Yeah. Good idea.
Raise fundraising through the sport displays. Simple, step-by-step plan that your sports team can follow to help raise funds. Sports can be costly for teams, players, parents, and this can be your solution. The Sport Displays was featured on Dragon's Den and can offer the support you need or have you purchase a product that will allow you to display your favorite sports jerseys and shirts. If you are interested to know more, you can check out their website, thesportdisplays.com, or email us at thegamesportsshow@gmail.com. The Game Sports Show is sponsored by Flawless Roofing Sure Seal Incorporated. Flawless Roofing provides over 30 years experience and specializes in residential and commercial rooftops. Come on, you need to protect your investment. Start from the top. Check them out on Facebook or on their website, flawlessroofing.ca. Booyah, and it's time for the Game Sports Show. It is your host, David McCaig Jr., bringing you another special edition upload powered by the Game Entertainment and Media, TGEM for short. Special shout out to our sponsors, the Sports Displays and Little Caesars Pizza. Wherever you're tuning in, the Game Sports Show and TGEM are happy to have you with us here for an, as always, special edition upload. And let me tell you, as promised, it will always be electrifying content, and this will be no different to all the other uploads that the Game Sports Show provides. Also, wherever you're listening, make sure you are subscribed to the Game Sports Show and TGEM, followed and liked. There's TGEM's YouTube channel and the Game Sports Show's audio channel, such as Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Google, and Podbean podcast platform. Simply to search the Game Sports Show or the Game Entertainment Media on Google, and you'll see us there. If you say you can't find us, I don't know what else to tell you. Now, getting to the co-host joining yours truly for tonight's show. You hear him on the special edition uploads with yours truly and also on our top shelf editions. Analyst for the Game Sports Show and the Game Entertainment Media, Alex Parr. Parzy, my friend, how's it going?
I'm doing very well. The only thing, right now when we were recording, it's just creeping into October. Just when my golf game was heating up, running out of runway here though. So, I've been better, but been worse as well.
You know what? Summer went by way too fast, that's for sure. And I haven't gone out on the golf course with you like I promised. We're going to have to try to hit it up before the time comes, before the snow falls. Oh, I can't believe I'm saying snow.
Some but, good know, content for the channel, watching you throw a club into the bush.
Getting absolutely rattled. But you know what that means when snow's coming? That means hockey. It's on its way. And obviously in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, hockey is the heartbeat of the city. And I want to get into the special edition guest here. And it's a very special guest. And this guest was drafted by the New York Islanders, second round, 38th overall in the 1980 NHL entry draft. He played three seasons for the Medicine Hat Tigers in the WHL, spent time with the Indianapolis Checkers in the CHL, where then he jumped to the NHL. In the show, he played for the New York Islanders, Los Angeles Kings, and the San Jose Sharks, playing in 677 games, posting a record of 271, 265, and 88. 17 shutouts, and he also played 84 playoff games. He's a bronze medalist in the World Championship, a one-time Canada Cup champion, and in the WHL was named to second all-star team. He also had the goaltending records for saves in a playoff game until that was broken in 2020. This guest held that record from 1987 until 2020. After playing in a career that ranged from 1981 to 1998, he then took the jump years after into the world of broadcasting. He has been featured in multiple areas of TV and radio. However, you will know him within the Hockey Night in Canada, filling your ears within that expertise of his on Saturdays and echoing through your halls. Also, it would be key to mention that he does work in the field of mental health in terms of being an advocate, with also having a book titled Calling the Shots that he recently just posted on Instagram as well. The one and only Kelly Rudy. Kelly, it's a pleasure to have you on the show here tonight.
David and Alex, thank you. Holy cow, that's quite the intro.
And that's all the time we have for today, Kelly. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to this chat.
Obvious, for sure. You know, you and I have connected throughout the time last winter until now, and it was able to be worked out. It's terrific. And that's one thing I pride on is those long intros for guests, but also the draft story, which we'll get into later in the show. I've had multiple messages from shows. People love the draft story. So don't worry, listeners. I'll get to that. The first topic I want to get to, and with this show, Kelly, we like to go all over the place, okay? We like to talk about you. This is all about you, my friend. Everything is about you, and for this whole entire 30, 40, 45 minutes that we talk, I want to get into the past. I want to get into the present. I want to get into the future, even if you want to get into that. If you can tell the future, that's great. The first topic I want to get into, though, first is your book. Okay, I want to get right into the marketing of that book. And I figured to maybe save this for the end, but if we could talk about it now and plug it now, just in case I get rambling on and forget to bring it up later, why not?
Okay.
So you have written a book titled Calling the Shots. You have done a recent post on Instagram about it. Let's talk about it. What is about? What can you get into about and promote it to our listeners?
Well, I had been like most athletes at some point, or former athletes, you get offered book deals. And I had turned down a number of deals, especially when I first quit playing, because it seemed as though when I first quit playing, the kind of storyline I kind of got from the publishers was, okay, let's kind of have like a tell-all. You've just left the game. Let's hear some of these stories. And I wasn't up for that at all. And my book now isn't a tell-all. It's not a get-even. But there are people in the book that I talk about that my relationships didn't go all that well. But that's going to happen, right? That's going to be when you play a sport as long as I did, you're not going to have all wonderful relationships. So that was a time in my life where I thought, I'm a bit more reflective. And at that time, I think I would have been about 56 years old, something like that. And I was thinking, yeah, this is a good time to tell my story. And Kirsty McClellan Day approached me, and she's amazing. She's written so many other books. I think two of Gretzky's books, maybe two of Ron McLean's, a number of others. And so we just sat down and started carving out this book. And then we didn't really have a theme until we started to get underway. And then she came up with it. You know what? Whenever you tell stories to me, Kelly, it's all about relationships. So that's what this book is going to be about. And so it turned out to be just that. And I share some beautiful stories about Al Arbor, whom I loved, and Barry Melrose. And there's a chapter in there. In fact, David and Alex, it was the last chapter in the book. I was leaving her house. We thought we had the book wrapped up. And I turned around and I said, you know, Kirsty, I'm missing out something in this book that's very important to me. And if I don't share it, shame on me. So we sat back down and it just came blurting out. And it was about what I didn't recognize at the time, but a mental health episode I was going through in 92, 93 with LA. And it was very, very painful. It was painful sharing. It was hard to do, but I'm glad I did, because it's opened up this discussion. As you mentioned, we're mental health advocates in our family. So that conversation has been ongoing, but it was a really draining thing to do, to write a book. And Wayne Gretzky was nice enough to write the foreword. So it was a really great, but emotional experience.
Yeah, I can imagine. See, the mental health is, I wish it was more recognized before, but it's better now than never being a part. And it's recognized. It's such a severe part of the game. Athletes deal with it, educators in the workplace, everywhere. Mental health is everywhere. And it's so important to recognize it and know that if you are going through it, to reach out, talk, do what your comfort for it. Sometimes people don't have that enjoyment to talk about it with others, if it's a counselor or if it's a coach, if it's a friend, a parent even. Sometimes people like to talk to their dog. I love talking to my dog. He probably thinks I'm nuts, but that's fine.
I talk to myself.
Yeah, literally. You know, honestly, and just being that, Kelly, it's great to see yourself in our athletes and also other podcasters that are well-known. I know there's definitely a lot of podcasters out there that are podcasters now and sharing their story. And that's also what's big is when you share your story and your experience, somebody can maybe relate to that. And if they relate to that, that could be another coaching opportunity for them, right? That's the big thing. And for you to stop and go back in to write that chapter, that is arguably everything you've been through is like obviously impressive. And obviously what you dealt with in 1993 was certainly hard to go through. But you writing that chapter may be something that saves somebody, you know, more heartache or more upset or more mental health issues. And they're able to come forward with something just because of reading that chapter of yours.
Yeah, it started really with our daughter, Caitlin. And we're going way back to the year 2005. For almost a year, we all see it a little bit differently. I noticed, my wife noticed, started to see some little, what I thought were quirky little habits by Caitlin. And then when summer 2005, when she was 12, life became unmanageable for her. In fact, the first day of school, she couldn't get out of the car. And so it was that day that we went and found a child psychologist and got Kate the help that she needed. And that was a real battle. But I've always said that Kate is the strongest person I've ever known. But she shared her story publicly in 2013. And I just thought that was just amazing. But kind of to your point, David, it's not for everybody to share. And I don't suggest it for everybody. Some people can share and they're okay. And others, you don't need to share. In fact, we have another person very close to us whom we love dearly, and they choose not to share. They're going through something. But what the great thing about that story is although they don't want to share, they've gone and got the help that they need. And so that's the really important thing, because don't do it alone. It's way too painful. It's lonely. It's too difficult to do. But so, you know, when Kate was brave enough to share in 2013, then I started to share just recently, in fact, about a year, year and a half ago. Other than that chapter in the book, I started going to social media, sharing what I've been going through recently for about the last 3+ years. And I'm happy to say that I am doing really well now and I get the help that I need.
Awesome. Awesome. See, you know what? One thing that I was going to ask you was what influenced you to write it, but you touched on numerous points there. You went through it. You had your child go through it. You know, and I'm sure, you know, bringing that forward is just for a lot of people, like you said, some people are comfortable bringing it forward, talk about not, and some are. It's so important. It's absolutely important. I wish it was more recognized before when you had the coaches, and even in the 90s or 80s and the early thousands, that education for coaches wasn't there too. So I'm kind of leaning now towards the athletic side where, you know, athletes go through it. Doesn't matter what level you're at. If you're major, junior, junior B, junior D, you know, it doesn't matter where you're at. If you're competitive and you're going through challenges, it's important to recognize and help somebody help someone overcome them in their comfort zone, though, you know, not putting them out of that comfort zone.
So to your point, David, this is kind of exciting and heartwarming both at the same time for me. When we started sharing our story, a number of coaches in the National Hockey League, some general managers have approached me privately and or called me and said, hey, listen, I've had a couple coaches talk about their own personal experience going through things. I had coaches talk to me about other family members and asking, you know, what did you do? What did you recognize? As you know, I think every single team has multiple people available for their players to talk to on a regular basis. I know Al Arbor. One of the reasons why I talk so much about him, because in his own way, we didn't have the tools back then, but he was way ahead of the curve. He understood the mental game. And although we had the same set of rules for everybody, he treated us, every single one of us, differently. And he treated us as different individuals, because we are, you know, we're playing the same sport. We all come from different backgrounds. We found different ways to get to the National Hockey League, and And so Al was great. He was way ahead of the curve. And so was Barry Melrose, my coach in LA, because he was the one that got the help for me originally. So he was the one that made the introduction to Tony Robbins, whom I worked with many times one-on-one back then. And that was a game changer for me. In fact, I ended up playing five more years simply because of that relationship that Barry started between Tony and I.
See, and honestly, the help that you can get, I've said it a couple times on this now, it's so important to mm-hmm. get that. If whatever challenge you may be going through in the topic of mental health, it's not just one topic, there's a branch, it's a stem,
yeah.
in the way that it is. Yeah. And it's important for individuals like yourself, or just to have that opportunity that to go forward to somebody if you feel comfortable that way to do so.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that it did help you play a few seasons, because it was great to see you. I remember, I'll be honest, I'm born in 1991, okay? So I'll be honest, I grew up watching the Don Cherry tapes for Big, you know, I remember seeing you when I was younger than San Jose. That's kind of where I remember seeing you, is in San Jose, of course.
Okay.
I was too young to see you in LA and obviously with the Islanders, but obviously highlights of you. And I know the panel likes to show some tape of you sometime, but it's great. It's great to see that you did play and that you've also took a big step in your career afterwards. Because sometimes if you go through challenges and you have it, even though if you overcome it or not, sometimes when you're done with the game, that's it. You put it aside, right? But you found that extra step after playing, where you're in broadcasting, and we're thankful for that, because you're great at that. And I'm not trying to kiss your ass. I'm being honest with you. I'll let you have a little bit of the floor here. I've taken.
Dave, I was just gonna say, even if you were born earlier, you'd just repress this time in LA. We're both Leafs fans. We both know how that story.
I wanted
went.
To go I a full wondered, show without.
I wondered that. When that was gonna come up.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to go a whole show without bringing up that. I even hid the jersey. I'm going to try to move the jersey in the back corner there. I hid it because I wasn't going to show it for this broadcast.
I'm sure Kelly knows just as well as anyone else. We're Leafs fans. Center of the hockey universe. Everything's about the Leafs. Who Sean Bercy signs in LA? How does that affect Rasmus Sandin?
I listen when... I knew you guys were from the Sioux. I had a good feeling that you guys would be Leafs fans. And hey, listen, growing up, I was a big Leaf fan as well, right? I mean, it was basically on Saturday nights growing up in Edmonton, we'd go play a little bit of ball hockey, come back in and watch the Leafs or the Canadians play, then go back outside and play ball hockey. And so it was one of my greatest life experiences, in fact, to play in the National Hockey League, but not only that, to step on the ice in Maple Leaf Gardens and the Montreal Forum. Those are two experiences that I'll have with me the rest of my life. And it's just something that it's hard to explain personally, because those are like buildings I never imagined I would ever play hockey in, for good reason. I wasn't very good growing up. And so to think that I'd one day step on the ice in Maple Leaf Gardens and play a National Hockey League game, and same for Montreal, very cool.
Well, at what age did you realize that maybe there was a chance you could take it to that next level?
You know what, Alex, that's a great question, because I think there'd be a lot of other stories out there that are not similar to mine. I didn't really think that I had a chance to play in the National Hockey League till my first training camp. You mentioned, David, I was drafted in 1980. So, and I was a 19-year-old kid getting drafted. Back then, that was the first inkling I had, really, that I might have a chance. I played, our first preseason game was in Chicago, in the historic Chicago Stadium, which was another treat. But it was after that game, I played two periods. I had 36 shots, I believe. I gave up five goals, which, you know, considering I just got drafted, that's a pretty good first start, right? You only give up five on 36 in your first preseason game in Chicago, a tough building.
Yep.
And that was the first thing, first time I really think that I thought, you know what? I'm a little bit closer than I ever thought I was. I never thought I'd ever make it. I never did. And then that was the first time when it really occurred to me that, holy, you know, I knew I was still a long ways away. As you guys talked about, I went back to junior, played one more year, then I had 2 years in the minors. But it was all building towards something. I had no idea quite what level I could get to, But that, to answer your question, Alex, that was the first time in my life that even playing junior, those first two years, I never thought the possibility of playing National Hockey League existed for me.
See, and that, and those stories, you hear the stories, like you said before, it's like, okay, you grew up in the rep system, you know, you get drafted as a 18-year-old,
yep,
and you make it, or the Gretzky stories, you get him right out of the WHA, lucky Edmonton there. It seems like Edmonton gets lucky with either a first overall pick or unlucky, whatever you want to call it. It's been tough for Edmonton fans too, for some time, but you know, there's different stories, and we'll get into like the draft story itself, like we're worried for that a bit after. But I know the next topic we want to get into first was broadcasting. Like I said, we're going to rewind and go past. So, Alex, I'll let you start this the point with broadcasting. Like I said, I won't try to take too much of the airtime. I like to hog it.
Yeah. Well, at what point in your career, was it even during your playing career, where you said, I still want to be involved in hockey, and how did it take you to broadcasting?
Yeah, so very clear, Alex. When I was playing early on, my days with the New York Islanders, I love watching hockey, and I bring that up because not all players do, right? Some guys in the National Hockey League never watch a game. There's no right or wrong answer. I just like to. And even furthermore to that, I like to watch the intermissions, and I like to watch the interviewer, and I like to watch the player getting interviewed. And it kind of, you know, grabbed my attention. I was kind of using it as a learning tool. I wanted to be a little bit different than other players. So I think I concentrated on those interviews and tried to give a little bit more thoughtful answers. And so when I really started enjoying it, that whole experience, then I thought, I wonder if this is something I'd like to do after my career ends. And luckily for me, my career was starting to wind down when I was in LA. And in 1995, we missed the playoffs by 1 point. And we were in Chicago. We flew home the next day. And my wife says to me, John Shannon called. He'd like you to call back. And at the time, I had known John for a number of years. At that time, he was the executive producer of Hockey Night in Canada. And he offered me a position. He said, we're starting this brand new atrium show in the CBC building on Front Street in Toronto. And we'd like you to come and rotate Ron and Don one night and then Ron and you the other night for the first round. And he goes, but I will tell you, you're not my first choice. And I go, okay, who's the first choice? He goes, Wayne Gretzky. So luckily for me, Wayne declined. And that was the start of my days with Hockey Night in Canada. I did it for 4 years, with my last 4 years in the National Hockey League, when our team didn't make the playoffs and or lost in the first round. I think a couple of years I did two rounds, which is, it's quite a grind. I mean, you play the full NHL season, then I went to Toronto for another month to do two rounds, which it sort of got me used to the grind of being a broadcaster. It's not physical work like my old job, but it's certainly hard work because it's long hours. And so I got the bug. And immediately after I retired, I was offered a position with Hockey Night in Canada. And that was that made my transition from playing to broadcasting quite easy, in the sense it wasn't easy work, don't get me wrong, but it gave me something to latch onto, not just quit hockey and then wonder what I'm going to do with the next 40 or 50 years of my life. I had an opportunity to really go, you know, I like this. And as you can see, I still enjoy it. I'm still passionate about it. I want to say I'm entering my 24th year full time. So who would have ever thought that? I mean, that's miraculous to me.
See, I didn't mention the length of year. See, I guess I did miss one thing in the introduction. I could.
Wow, Dave, that's a first, you know, man. Slacking.
One thing that I was going to say about the broadcast, I was behind the mask. I remember that in the intermission too. I don't know what voiceover was what says behind the mask with Kelly Rudy. Here I am trying to sound like the EA Sports guy almost, but there's from that, and it grew. And Hockey Night in Canada is the staple every Saturday. It should be a holiday. I even have a note to tell you that, is that even though that's a Saturday, it should be a holiday that goes into the Monday every week, which means you have short weeks all the time.
Right.
You know, because it's everything stops on Saturday, right? It does. you got the Leafs playing, or you got the Habs playing in the first game, Ottawa too. And then at the night game, you got one of the guys out of the teams out west, Calgary, Edmonton, or Vancouver. Now Winnipeg's in there, of course, right? Which is great. I was very excited to see Winnipeg back in the league. You know, that was fantastic. But, you know, when it comes to the panel with you guys, you know, and I'd like to get into the panel a little bit. Obviously, you got David Amber, you got Jennifer Botterill, who's fantastic at what she does. Yeah. And of course, Ron McLean there. Kevin Bieksa, who our co-host Brendan Brooks knows as well. And, you know, I kind of wanted to ask you, there's always a jokester and someone who's a serious person. Okay. Now, everyone asks on our show who's the jokester and who's the serious one. I'm not going to answer those ones. Maybe Parr will throw it out there because I think Parr's the jokester. If you had to label yourself and somebody else, okay, what would you label yourself as? And in my prediction, I think Kevin Bieksa has got to be the joker. I could just tell by the style he has.
It's funny, though. I kind of see it a little bit differently. I totally understand what you're saying. But I think it's an on-air persona, although we are authentic. I mean, we are who we are. But I think behind the scenes, I just think of all the laughs that all of us have. And so I see exactly what you're saying. The guy that has the most fun, it seems, or tells the most jokes would be Kevin for sure. But I know, like, Elliot, David, Ron, Jennifer, all the other people that I've worked with, PJ when he was on the show, so much fun. Like, I like to think of myself as a really fun guy. But on camera, I think most people, yeah, you're probably right. They'd probably say I'm a lot more serious. But yeah, that's interesting. And Jennifer is really focused. She's razor sharp. Like,
yes, she is.
And so I guess I'm hesitating only because I'm thinking behind the scenes how we all sort of interact and the fun that we have, but not really watching the show. Like, I don't watch a show very often. I record it most times, but I rarely watch it. You know, the only time I really watch it is if I think I really made a bad mistake, or if I really nailed it, or there was something special. What I've been trying to do a little bit more often, though, is recording my Flames games, because I'm the color analyst for Flames Regional. Yeah. And so a lot of times, especially when we're home, I'll record those and I'll come home and sort of watch it when my wife goes to bed, and I'll sort of critique it, but in a fun way. If I make a mistake, I won't beat myself up. I think I used to do that too much, and now I just sort of let it go and have fun with it. And yeah, that's a great observation by you, though, because I'm trying to think. I know a lot of people have fallen in love with Kevin for good reason, because he has that different personality.
Yeah, you know what? And there's times when I watch, Kelly, to be straight with you, and you're not this. If I felt you had some bad questions, I feel like I'm at a degree, even though I haven't seen you in person. Some exchanging texts the last few months, I feel like I could be honest. You're not one of these people. So sometimes I sit and watch. And it's not the Hawk and Knight Canada panel. It's not even really the TSN panel. I'll say it. It's not. I have no critique there with any of them. But there's a couple analysts that I hear, even in other sports, where I go, why are you asking that question? There's some questions that I hear, and I go, what in the are you thinking? Why, I think of Phil Kessel, this guy's such an idiot here, right? Like, I feel like that would be something, or John Tortorella, my God, that guy in interviews, or just, this is a stupid question, I'm not answering that. Like, I love it, because if I got asked a stupid question, I feel like I would just be like, okay, next question. You know, like, do you ever... You don't have to mention any names, but do you ever, when you're sitting at home, you probably hear some other interviews and players going through it. Do you ever sit and say to yourself, why in the hell did he ask him that question? That is the dumbest question I have ever heard.
Yeah, that's a pretty common thought. The other thing I usually think about, though, especially if it's a real veteran broadcaster, they may have been surprised by something along the way. Maybe somebody was talking in their ear and they were told that they're only going to have to ask two questions, and something technically goes wrong behind the scenes, and now they're told to extend the interview, and they maybe had not thought of anything that beyond the two questions. And so there's always that. I mean, it was interesting because for years when I was covering the Western part of the NHL, I was a regular on After Hours for years and years and years, right? And that kind of can put you in that same situation. And I'm sure I asked a lot of dumb questions also because we don't know, you know, the guest is picked for a good reason, right? We have an idea about their personality, we think, and we want to share that with Canadians. But the other thing is, you don't know how they're going to react after the game. Maybe they didn't play well. Maybe they got beat badly. Maybe they didn't play well and they're not very talkative now. So it's funny, Scott Oak, he's got pages of topics and questions and all these things to go through. And I used to write down something like 15, 20 questions just in case we got in that situation where the guest wasn't very talkative. Now, most times I usually only had 4 or 5 questions max because our guests were usually pretty gracious. But I remember one time Roberto Luongo, we had him on our show. We had planned it on Tuesday and he was going to put on a little mini goalie clinic after the game in Vancouver for After Hours. It was a great concept. It was great. Problem was, he was terrible that night, and I think he gave up 7 or 8. He might have even been pulled in the game, and I truly thought that he was going to cancel. He wasn't going to do the post-game goalie clinic, which wouldn't have seemed unreasonable to me. He came out, and he was extremely gracious to the kids. He was so kind, and my thoughts about him, I always respected him highly, but my thoughts about Roberto Luongo that night changed and just grew and grew and grew. I thought, what a pro. He didn't have to do that.
Yeah. You see, that when you go that next step and you have someone who's interviewing, you know, we've had that a couple times on the show, and I'm not going to name those guests because they'll probably send me a message. But, you know, since you try to pry the answers out of them a little bit, I can imagine what the frustration would be on national television. And you just, but you know your listener, or sorry, your guest going in, that was a key thing that you took away there. And with Roberto doing that, taking that extra step to still, even after having an absolute awful night, to do that just shows the character he has, right?
Oh, boy. Well, I remember one interview. For a long time, we had a serious satellite radio Hockey Night in Canada show, and I co-hosted it 2 days a week. I think I was on the show for at least 4 years. It was really fun. It was cool to do. We had a new guest every 15 minutes, and I hosted with Jeff Merrick, then Gord Stellick, you know, a couple other guys, I believe. And it was so cool to get to know the players from in a different way. And they're way more relaxed on the radio. But we had one guest, and I won't say his name. I won't bury him, but he was horrible. He basically gave 1 or 2 word answers. It seemed as though he had no interest in being on the show, which he probably didn't. I suppose this PR guy said, this is a good move for you or something. And I, every single time I watched him play after that, I just couldn't stand him. I was like, oh, I hope this guy plays horrible tonight. I couldn't ever cheer for him again.
The Kelly curse. If you come on as a bad guest, we hope that you suck.
Now, Kelly, you've talked about the good personalities like Luongo, who I personally think would do great on a panel. Is there anyone currently playing in the NHL that you think would make a great transition over into the broadcast world?
Oh, boy, there are many.
PK's a cop-out answer. He's already going, so you can't say him.
He's amazing, right? I just want to go back a step. Because we're talking about Kevin Bieksa. When Scott Oak and I would be out in Vancouver, and we had Kevin on as a guest, I think, at least 5 times. At least I've been on the show with Kevin about 5 times. I always said, behind the scenes, he was my favorite guest ever on After Hours. And I'm not just saying because we're talking and he happens to be on Hockey Night now. He was always my favorite. And then one time I called his agent and I told him the exact same thing. He's terrific. He's so thoughtful. He's funny. He tells great stories. He understands the game extremely well. And so there are a lot of guys like that. Mike Camilleri to me, and we've had him on the show when he retired a couple times. I think he's just so busy away from the game that it's hard for him to commit. But he was always really informative. You know, I always think of Camilleri as a guy that we would go into the dressing room after the morning skate and talk to him, and he'd have more questions for us than we'd have for him. He'd be like, what's this guy like? What do you think about this player? Why do you think this player does this? Or why do you think this player has success? It was cool to listen to a guy like Camilleri. And there are other guys. I'm not remembering everybody, but that's kind of what it's like in the dressing room. You get a lot of guys really firing questions at you, which is really cool.
See, and that's I like how you said PK Subban is a cop out answer, Alex.
He's already gone.
That's exactly what I was going to say. But Mike Camilleri is one that I wouldn't have thought of. But you brought up Kevin Bieksa being on After Hours. I almost, when we were talking about, I want to say, because I remember him being on there just numerous times, right? He was on there quite often. And, you know, I think who would be good, Alex, and I feel like answering this question, and I think you're going to like the first name. I feel like Ovechkin would be good to have on a panel. I think he'd be interesting to have on it a little bit because he'd have a very different take. I never thought Paul Bissonnette would be what he is in terms of.
Is he great or what?
Yeah, literally. Like, he's fantastic. And I remember telling Alex this story, and I'll even tell you quick, Kelly, because this isn't about me and my experiences. But I was at the Rogers Center one game, and I'm throwing him under the bus here a little bit, but it's fine. He comes down the stairs, and he's with two friends. He sits down, and I look over at him, and he wasn't on his podcast that he was on now. He was just finishing up with the Coyotes, and I yelled, "Biz," because this is when he started being on Twitter a little bit, when Twitter was big in 2014, 2015. And I said, and he looked over, and I said, now, going back, I don't like taking pictures with people that are celebrities. I feel like that's too invading. I feel like I would be – or athletes just feel like saying hi is good enough, right, because they get bombarded. But he goes, shh, come up. I follow him up the stairs, and he put his arm around me to take a picture of me and my buddy, and he goes – he tells me, you have a radio voice. You know, you should do a show. And that's actually kind of what, fun fact, got me into things. I said, well, maybe you should as well. I think you'd be entertaining. And he goes, don't worry. I'm on it, pal. I'm on it.
Where's your piece of the pie, Dave? Where's your piece of that?
Yeah, there was no, like, he was talking about doing it then. You could just tell someone's persona, right? It's just like you when you were playing, natural fit. Kevin Bieksa, natural fit. I think Luongo would be a natural fit.
He'd be
too,
so
right?
good. That, like, guy's so funny.
He's great on Twitter, too. Brian Burke is hilarious. it's great.
You know who I think would be fantastic as well? And we're really starting to see his personality shine. Austin Matthews.
Yes.
I love the way in which he's really grown into this. He's the face of the franchise, and he just has really embraced it. You know, he threw out the first pitch a couple days ago, and his teammates were joking about that. It looked to me like he had a lot of fun. Whenever we've had him on hockey night, he really embraces it. He gives great answers to the questions we have for him. But the reason I really bring up Austin Matthews, because that would be a difficult position to be in, right? The face of the franchise in a market like Toronto, and to really embrace that's hard to do. That's a special skill to be that fun loving and in that sort of pressure market. So I think he'd be terrific. I don't know if he'd ever want to do it, but in any case, he would be excellent.
It's a very good point, because you play in the Toronto market in the middle of everything, and he is like you said, the face, but everything goes, it's either they're blaming the coach, Matthews, Tavares, or the goaltending. The defense, which is probably their more weaker point, maybe goaltending, whatever you want to get into. But the Matthews has that attitude that he's perfect for Toronto media, like, because he's so calm.
Yep.
He'll answer that question for you. He'll say, blah, blah, blah. Move on.
But he'll also say your question's stupid if it's stupid.
And he'll be entertaining if you have to. How you like that? Hey, yeah, you know, I was just trying to try. Yeah, he knows the difference. He's well-versed in those answers. That's a very good point. Very good point. Now, you know what? We'll probably touch a bit back on the talking point, but I want to get into that draft story now. So, you know, the draft day story, you get drafted second round to the Islanders. Where were you on your draft day? What were you doing? Were you there? Were you golfing with your buddies? Were you out having dinner? Did you miss the call? What was the day of Kelly Rudy's draft day?
All right. So there's a lot in that, because you go back to 1980, At that time, the draft wasn't the big deal that it is now. It wasn't televised. And typically back then, there were only the first round draft choice would usually go. The guaranteed first rounders. I wasn't in that category. I was told personally that I probably wouldn't go until the third or fourth round. So that year, the draft was in Montreal. I'm at home in Edmonton, and I'm playing ball hockey in our basement with my brother. That's exactly. We had an unfinished basement at that time, a portion of it. And my brother Ken and I were playing ball hockey. The phone rang, and I didn't think much of it, right? Yeah. So my brother goes upstairs to get the phone, and he goes, Kelly, it's for you. So I go up to the phone, and the gentleman introduces himself. He goes, I'm Jimmy Devolano with the New York Islanders, and I'd just like to inform you that we've drafted you in the second round. Congratulations and all this. I didn't know of Jimmy at that point. I was to get to know him, and he told me the whole draft story and all that behind, or much later, but... And then at that point, he was like, okay, well, you will be getting a letter in the mail in about a month or something. And back then also, not all draft choices went to the training camp. So much to my surprise, when the letter came, then it was an invite to training camp. And keep in mind, I had never left Western Canada at that point in my life. And I'd never... I think I'd only been on two planes in my life, once from Edmonton to Vancouver and return, and then once from Victoria, I think, to Medicine Hat after the All-Star game in the Western Hockey League. And so getting on a plane in Edmonton, flying through Toronto to LaGuardia, New York City, was just mind-blowing to me. And then you had to find sort of – they had this little shuttle – that I had to get onto to catch to the team hotel. It was just, I just couldn't believe the size of the city, and then getting to Long Island, how big that was. And so that was a really cool experience. And as I mentioned earlier, I played in that first preseason game, and getting to know the guys. This was one of the coolest things of my life. We get on the plane, we were flying commercial back then to go to Chicago. And I know this was not an accident by the organization. To my left was Brian Trottier. I'm in the middle seat. And to my right is Mike Bossy. Like, how amazing is that? I was so shy, I doubt I said anything. I'd be surprised if Mike and Brian had told me at some point that I even talked to them. But and so it was, just a beautiful experience for me to get to sit between those guys and just sort of drink it all in and understand how two of the best that have ever played go about their business.
And I know you know the 80s Islanders were a dynasty, okay?
Yeah, they were pretty good. They were all right.
They were really good. And I know you kind of probably wanted to get into playing with those guys before his time went to L.A. So I'll let you say that before we jump to that L.A. trade.
What was their go-to move in practice, and how were you able to stop them? Did they have the edge on you in warmies, or how did that go between you and Brian Trottier?
Well, Brian was, how do I describe him? He was almost a perfect player back then. He was just, he did everything great offensively, defensively. He was mean, great shot, incredible playmaker. But in practice, I wouldn't say that. I was really competitive too. And so when it was Brian Trottier or Dennis Potvin or Mike Bossy, Clark Gillies, those kind of guys, you really bear down even more so. I will say this. I don't think I had much success stopping Mike Bossy in practice. He was just so incredibly talented, and he loved to score. Like, it didn't matter if it was a game, didn't matter if it was practice. He tried to score every single shot, and that was a challenge.
You see, and they were dethroned, obviously, by the Oilers. Of course, the Wayne Gretzky, Jari Kurri, the fellas in Edmonton, as their dynasty took off from one. And, you know, I bet you there's more we can get into with the Islanders, but there's one that I did in particular want to get into was before the LA trade, was Al Arbour. You did touch on him a little bit already, but he was such he's a legendary coach in the National Hockey League, and you got to experience that. I'm sure you got memories you could talk about with Dave about Al Arbour.
Well, I've always said this, and I know Al choked up one time. I couldn't travel. I was here in Western Canada, and we were going to do a feature on Al, and I couldn't get out there. I can't remember why. But so Elliot Friedman did the interview. You can find it on YouTube, but I find it pretty fascinating still. And but I had talked to Elliot in the days up becoming or before the interview, and he sort of picked my brain about Al. And so some of the questions Elliot asked Al were, you know, thoughts I had on Al. And Al always thought, which surprised me, that we didn't like him, that somehow he thought that in his own head that he had been too strict with us. And I always thought, no. And I've shared this story, and I know Al kind of broke down when Elliot asked a question, but I always said, like, I had an amazing mom and dad. My dad was the most gentle man I've ever met in my life. And I thought Al was like a second dad to me. And so Al was surprised to hear that, and he started to cry. And, you know, it was kind of cool to see, because I didn't know he had that sort of soft spot. I always liked him so much because I knew he cared about me. And I can't say that for all coaches that I ever played for. Most did. But Al expressed it in a way that even if he was really hard on you that day, I knew when I went home that Al cared about me. And that's special.
It is. You know what? I think I watched a few months ago. It was a Behind the Mask edition from 2009. I believe he was on that. Was that, I believe?
That makes sense.
Yeah, it was a few months ago now that I watched it. I saw it on there, and it's a legendary coach. LA, so there's a couple things to get into LA before we get to more of the conclusion side. Well, time flies when you're having fun. It's unfortunate. I read somewhere, and you can confirm or deny. I know you'll be honest with me, but and I read it on NHL.com, so it actually must not be a bad source. That you were shocked, let's keep it at that word, that you got traded to LA. It wasn't, not necessarily shocked, but it was something that maybe you didn't, is that the word you would use, a shock, or maybe disappointed? What would be the right word?
Pissed off?
I don't know.
All three of those, even another one, betrayed. I was, all those emotions, I was so mad at Bill Torrey and the Islanders organization. I wanted them to lose every single game for 100 years. Now, of course, I've softened, and I have actually quite a nice relationship with them, and you know, time heals all wounds. But I there was no rumors that I was getting traded, and so the day it happened, I was told of the trade the day before I was officially traded. And so it was crushing. And I didn't want to go to LA, but in hindsight, this is how it all changes, right? In hindsight, it turned out to be the best move of my career to go to LA and to play with Wayne and play there 8 years. And living in LA was just a beautiful experience for my wife and I and our kids. And, you know, there's so many things to do in LA that we really enjoy. Hockey was the most important thing. Winning was the most important thing. Growing the game was extremely important because of Wayne on our team and Bruce McNall and that whole experience. But it was just so cool because we lived literally 5 minutes away from the beach. So we had that. We went to Disneyland a lot. You know, there's just so many things to do in LA that we really fell in love with the place.
Oh. You know what? Something happened in LA. You did make the Stanley Cup Finals. You beat a team to get there that you cheered for growing up. Something happened in that game that Leaf fans will never live down. Par, I'll transition that to you. The 1993 Stanley Cup Finals where LA played Montreal, but they had to beat a team to get there, Par.
Well, for me, I was 4 years away from even being a thought, and I'm mad about it still, and I wasn't even close to being around for it. Did you see it happen? Did you see anything from your point of view that maybe a certain man might not have seen?
Okay, so as you can imagine, I'm, 180 feet down the ice?
Yeah.
So there's the offensive zone faceoff, and I did not see Wayne clip Doug Gilmore. Seconds later, I kind of assumed something happened simply because, you know, There was I can't remember how long till the whistle had blown after, but clearly Doug Gilmore was bleeding. And I saw the referees huddling, Kerry Fraser and the two linesmen huddling. And so I knew something had happened. I didn't know what. I didn't know it was going to turn out to be this thing they would still be talking about at that moment. But, you know, here's the other thing. I have two thoughts on that whole thing. We got a break, no question about it. But breaks happen, and yeah, officials miss calls. That was one of the lessons that Al Arbor told us all the time. It doesn't matter if you get a lucky call or a bad call. Don't let it affect you one way or the other. You just keep playing. It doesn't matter. And so that's why I was surprised, you know, a couple of years after that it still had momentum. Everybody is still talking about it. I'm surprised to this day that it does. But the number one thing I always think about, but the Leafs still had game 7 in their own building to beat us, and they lost.
So ain't that the story?
Right? You can't say that because of that missed high stick call that's the reason why they didn't beat us. Well said. And that we got the ref, you know, turned the series. That would be as silly as me saying, we won game 1 in Montreal, but we lost game 2 because Marty McSorley got caught with an illegal stick. Did we lose a series because of that call? Of course not. We lost the game, but we lost 3 consecutive games in overtime against Montreal. That wasn't because of the illegal stick. We just lost. Yeah. And so when you sort of talk about that incident, now I understand the Leafs Nation and they're passionate and they thought that it would have been great to have the Leafs versus Montreal in the finals. I understand all that, but I'm just saying from the opponent's perspective, I don't know why it was made to be such a big deal and still remains so in Leafs Nation.
That is such a good point.
We got to blame it on something. We're cursed. We got to put it on something.
Those were good teams, oh boy. Those Leafs teams right around that time,
yep.
Coached by Pat Burns and with Wendell and Doug Gilmore. Felix Potvin was amazing back then. You know, they had Dave Ellett. They had Todd Gill, whom I was lucky enough to play with in San Jose when my career is winding down. And he was one of my favorite captains I've ever had. I had some great captains in Dennis Potvin and Wayne Gretzky, but Todd, he didn't have the same skill, of course, but he was just phenomenal in the dressing room and stood up for all of us and great guy.
Yeah, you know, Montreal had a pretty good goaltender, too. There was a good goaltending battle between Patrick Waugh. Yeah. Right? Somebody named
Patrick
Waugh.
They had more than a good goalie. They had a great team.
Yeah, they did. They were overall just terrific. Yeah. And you know what? I remember talking with Montreal, with Pete. Pete Mihaljevic was on the show with Marcel Dion. Yeah. And when I was talking to Pete, everything with Montreal, the stories with Montreal, that's another very proud fan base for sure. But they've had good goaltending in their time, especially now with Carey Price, who, of course, is – going through his own battles off the ice. But before getting the final topic, too, I know you went to San Jose. You mentioned it after playing LA. It's like you wanted to stay in California, right? that was the plan.
I had two offers. One of the things that really turned it for us was we went to California as a free agent, and the Sharks invited our entire family there. So Donna and I and our 3 daughters went to San Jose in the summer. I can't remember at what point. And it was really cool because Dean Lombardi and Wayne Thomas, the assistant general manager, met us at the airport, drove us to our hotel from San Fran Airport, which is ballpark 45 minutes or an hour. So it's quite a long car ride to sort of talk. But what really turned it for me is we got there on a Friday night. Saturday and Sunday, I had meetings with them each day. Each meeting was ballpark around 2 hours, maybe 3 hours. So the thorough interviews they did with me really got me to like those two people a lot. And that, in fact, that was the moment when we got off the plane and met them, and they had a little goodie bag for Don and I, a little bit of wine and things, but they had T-shirts and Sharky, you know, the mascot, that little plush animals of Sharky for the kids. I thought, I like this organization. I wasn't going to be a huge part of it. I was definitely winding down my career, but still, to make us feel so special, I made up my mind that weekend that I was going to sign with them.
Love the teals, too. Love the Tails. Yeah. I gotta say.
Well, I gotta tell you though, there was another story behind the scenes. Not a lot of people know this about when I was going to sign in San Jose. So in the year before, my last year in LA, I blew up my left ankle the day before training camp. I was skating with the guys, and I blew up my ankle. So I missed the first 3 months of the year with LA. I missed all training camp and just over 2 months of the regular season. So now I'm a free agent. I go to San Jose so we can do all the meetings. And then the final thing was Dean says, okay, but the only thing is we'll offer you a contract, but you have to pass your physical. And I have to tell you, I was really nervous because I knew how bad my ankle was still. And I thought, oh, boy, I was quite nervous. And so I go into the dressing room. The orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Ting, is there. And Dr. Ting putting me through a physical. Then he gets to my ankles, does his exam and says, okay, I've got good news and bad news. And he goes, what do you want first? I go, give me the good news. He goes, I'm going to pass your physical. You're good to go. Bad news is your so-called good ankle is worse than your so-called bad ankle. So you're going to have ankle problems the rest of your life. And Dr. Ting was right because I'm still bothered by them every day. How's that for being scared about passing a physical?
Oh, no kidding.
Physicals, you know, you hear that. Those are so important for a team when it comes to contracts. But when you mentioned it, as you get older, the battles, the bruises that you go through, you feel it after, right? And you know what?
I was 35 years old, so it's not like I had a young body. I mean, my body was breaking down, so much at that point that it was. I always tell people it was something like the first 11 or so years of my career, I was rarely in the trainer's room. I didn't get hurt very often. And it's like the last 3-4 years of my career, I could never get out of it. I was always like, getting therapy for something to try and find a way to get back on the ice for a game. It was just get so frustrating.
Yeah. You know, and honestly, there's something that when it comes to injuries, it's hard to battle back from. Ankles are tough. Back is like when you hurt the sciatica. Shoulders are also really tough. And then, of course, the big one now is concussions, right? I've seen a lot of that where Sid has went through a lot of that. Yeah. And it's good to see that he's been able to play to the point that he is now. Honestly, yeah, I've always said on my show, I don't know if he has more than a couple years left. I really feel like he is that one hit away from somebody not thinking, or a young guy trying to make a name for himself, not by hitting them, but by going hard into the boards.
Yeah.
So that, and he's won multiple cups. Like, I wonder if this is his last couple of years we get to see Sid. I can't believe it. You know, honestly, that's flew by. I remember him getting drafted, and everything just flies by. And it's amazing. Ovechkin. Which I truly think he might pass the great one. I don't know. I don't want to say it.
It's so tough.
But it is. So before I get into the conclusion, Kelly, too, I had one point I did want to bring up. One last one. This is the third time I said that in a row. Third time. It's fine. We're having fun. There's a statistic that popped up, and I believe it was on CBC. It was on Sportsnet. Okay, and if I remember correctly, it mentioned the most locations of where you've let in goals in your career. and I believe a very substantial amount was listed as, Pyre, do you want to guess? You know what? I don't want you to guess.
I'm not going to offend this man, because what if that's the one that he made the most saves on? Then I just look like an asshole.
The five hole. Can you talk about that or confirm the five hole? Apparently, there's a lot of goals that went five hole on you, Kelly.
Okay, so that graphic that you saw was a joke. It was made up by our production team.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, I was working. That was a Flames regional game.
Yep.
And
that's right.
We like to have fun on our show, and I think we had a graphic up for one of the goalies involved in the Flames game that night, and I can't remember which goalie it was, and showed where throughout the course of the season he was scored on.
Yeah.
And then somebody, one of our production people in the truck, all of a sudden thought, hey, this would be hilarious. Let's show where Kelly has been scored on throughout his career. So they had I can't quite remember the board, but it was something like, nothing on high stick, nothing high glove, nothing low along the ice, and like 21,000 goals through the leg. It was something super funny.
97%, and he had a number at the ball. It's like a 97% of your goals were fine.
Too high glove, too high stick, something like that. I laughed and laughed and laughed. Now, in fairness, I did let in a lot of five-hole goals because that was the era, right? A lot of us did. But I laughed at that. That's one of the funniest things our production people have ever done. It was amazing.
I thought it was absolutely hilarious. I knew it wasn't real, sort of, until I...
I was going to say, did you fall for that?
No,
Dave?
That's why I said, can you confirm? Can you confirm? I thought it was absolutely hilarious.
Good save.
It's great. Yeah, it's so funny to watch. You know, usually, Kelly, we do a rapid question at the end, but we're gonna skip that because maybe we could do a part two down the road, just kind of tease the listeners. And we've went to the hour point where we, as I said before, we recorded. We aim for a number, but it's likely not going to hit that number.
All good.
But, you know, this, it's been awesome, Kelly, for real, getting to chat with you. I know we finally were able to touch base, and like I said, hopefully we can connect in the future. And even before I let you go, I want to give you the floor to tell our listeners, to the exception of watching hockey on Saturdays, maybe where to follow you, follow your content. Kind of the floor is yours to promote yourself a little bit.
All right, so you can follow me on Twitter at Kelly Rudy, and on Instagram, I think it's lowercase Kelly _Rudy. Those are the two places that you can follow me on social media. I will tell you this, I'm not overly active on social media. So in particular, during the off season, I may have only looked at social media about people contacting me maybe 4 or 5 times only. I haven't even been on my stuff in at least 3 weeks to check messages or anything. So I apologize if you send me a DM and I don't get back to you for a while. I'm a lot better during the regular season, but right now I'm just chilling and having a good time.
100%. You know what? It's great to follow, especially I don't read a lot of books, but I think I might have to not only to support buying your book. I've only read hockey books in my life. In school, I read those Coles notes to cheat when you read the book. I'll be honest. Okay. I that's how I got English marks.
It's
over now. It's over now. The teachers can't get me in trouble. Those grades are done. Those C pluses are gone. Alex, I want to say thank you to you also for taking the time to come on. As always, it's always fun.
Nowhere else I'd rather be.
No, you don't nowhere really? Okay.
Maybe the golf course.
Yeah, not with me there, of course. But Kelly, again, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And to get to know stories, like I said, there's more I wanted to get into, but I look at the time and I can't believe how fast it went. The stories you shared were fantastic. You'll be on Saturdays. I listen to a lot of shows that you're on. If you ever say something that I think is questionable, I might have to shoot you a text and be like, what the hell were you thinking? And you can just tell me, watch your mouth, Dave. They'll definitely watch now, and be exciting now to know a little bit where I think Kevin BX is. Now I'm gonna watch Jennifer Botter a little closer, how focused she is, even more. Amazing. And don't tell Elliot, even though I don't really know him, that I forgot to mention him about the panel. I feel like he's a pretty big staple there too as well. So thank you for coming on, Kelly. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks, David and Alex. I had a lot of fun.
Awesome. Good luck. No worries. We did too.
That's great. I want to remind listeners to make sure you hit like, follow, and subscribe and all the Game Sports Show and the Game Entertainment and Media platforms. There's YouTube. I said all the introduction. I don't have to repeat it to you. If you're listening by now, you should have already hit like, subscribe. Okay, you're an hour in. You should have done it already. So realistically, you should have. Check out our website as well, thegamesportsshow.com. The Game Sports Show has an Instagram page and Facebook page you can check out as well. You can send a message on there. Comment below. Provide your feedback. Anything you want to ask Kelly, let me know, and I can forward it off to him. And maybe he'll give you an answer. I can certainly do that for you. It's a comment below. It's there for your interaction. I'm also here to remind you to keep your stick on the ice, swing your bats, catch your touchdowns, drain your threes, and shoot your shots. Booyah.